Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 641, titled Were We Controlled? Part 2, The Collapse of Bear Stearns. This is being recorded on July 27th of the year 2008. This broadcast is going to deal with, quite obviously, the collapse of Bear Stearns and also other aspects of the speculative market, speculative commodities market in particular. The title refers back to For the Record Program 327, Were We Controlled, which now becomes Were We Controlled Part 1. We are going to review part of that broadcast in Side 2 of this program, and it deals with the deliberate collapse of the commodities market on November 22nd, 1963. And that collapse was engineered through the deliberate collapse of Tino DeAngelis's Allied Crude Vegetable Oils refining. That is a complicated gambit in which the Bunge firm, a German-based and Latin American-based firm, which almost certainly appears to be part of the Bormann Capital Network, was the cornerstone in a very complicated scheme involving mind control and the manipulation of Tino DeAngelis to collapse the commodities markets and the stock market. That collapse then further aggravated by the assassination of President Kennedy. What we're going to be looking at in this broadcast is the starting of rumors and the apparent deliberate targeting of Bear Stearns, which went under earlier this year and which was eventually bought out at pennies on the dollar by the Morgan firm. So we're going to take a look at that, and we're also going to speculate, pun intended, about what might have been behind that. Note that one of the apparent large elements in the deliberate torpedoing of Bear Stearns, which sent shockwaves through the financial markets in this country and around the world, was Deutsche Bank. And as I've said so many times in the past, in order to understand these broadcasts, please download and read the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning. It's available on the Spitfire website for free. And one of the major elements in this program's in the discussion on the For the Record shows and in that book is the fact that the Third Reich went underground utilizing the stolen capital of World War II. The Bormann Capital Network, literally the economic component of the Third Reich gone underground, is the largest, single greatest concentration of money power under a single control in world history. And all of the German core corporations, the German major corporations, including Deutsche Bank, are part of the Bormann Capital Network. What we're going to be looking at for our discussion on Bear Stearns is an article from Vanity Fair magazine. Specifically, this is from Vanity Fair of August of 2008. It's an article titled Bringing Down Bear Stearns, and this particular story begins, the excerpt that we're going to begin with is as follows. By the way, Molinaro here is Sam Molinaro, the chief financial officer of the late Bear Stearns, and this story begins on Monday, March 10th of 2008. It was an uneventful morning at first. Molinaro sat in his sixth-floor corner office overlooking Madison Avenue, catching up on paperwork after a week-long trip visiting European investors. Then, around 11, something happened. Exactly what, no one knows to this day, but Bear's stock began to fall. It was then, questioning his trading desks downstairs, that Molinaro first heard the rumor. Bear was having liquidity troubles, Wall Street's way of saying the firm was running out of money. Molinaro made a face. This was crazy. There was no liquidity problem. Bear had about $18 billion in cash reserves. Yet the whiff of gossip Molinaro heard that morning was the first tiny ripple in what within hours would grow into a tidal wave of rumor and speculation that would crash down upon Bear Stearns and, in the span of one fateful week, destroy a firm that had thrived on Wall Street since its founding in 1923. The fall of Bear Stearns wasn't just another financial collapse. There has never been anything on Wall Street to compare to it. A run on a major investment bank caused in large part not by a criminal indictment or some mammoth quarterly loss, but by rumor and innuendo that, as best one can tell, had little basis in fact. Bear had endured more than its share of self-inflicted wounds in the previous year, but there was no reason it had to die that week in March. What happened? Was it death by natural causes, or was it, as some suspect, murder? More than a few veteran Wall Streeters believe an investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission will uncover evidence that Bear was the victim of a gigantic bear raid, unquote. That is, a malicious attack brought by so-called short sellers, the vultures of Wall Street, who make bets that a firm's stock will go down. It's a surprisingly difficult theory to prove, and nothing short of government subpoenas is likely to do it. Faced with a thicket of lawsuits and federal investigations, not a soul in Bear's boardroom will speak for the record, but on background, a few are finally ready to name names. Quote, I don't know of any firm, no matter the capital, that could have withstood the kind of bombardment by the shorts, says a vice chairman of another major investment bank. This was not about capital, it was about people losing confidence, spurred on by rumors fueled by people who had an interest in the fall of Bear Stearns. He pauses to let the idea sink in. If I had to pick the biggest financial crime ever perpetuated, he concludes, I would say Bear Stearns. By the way, short selling was not only involved in this, there was massive short selling in the run-up to September 11th on many of the companies whose stocks were affected by that event, and it was short selling that was involved in what we are later going to examine as the rumor, unquote, namely that the collapse of the Tino De Angelis firm using Bunge Corporation was part of a complex gambit involving the assassination of President Kennedy. Skipping down in this particular article from Vanity Fair of August of 2008. In order to understand the complete scenario here, I strongly encourage listeners to read the article. It'll be available in the For the Record supplemental section in its entirety. Skipping down and continuing, the first to pull their money from Bear were several major hedge funds. So Molinaro and his men canvassed the repo lenders, which gave banks billions of dollars in overnight loans that have to be renewed each day. However, Molinaro found that all planned to roll over Bear's loans the next morning. Nobody was cutting us off, unquote, says a Bear executive involved in the events. Again, quoting, there was a lot of chatter, though. The hedge funds were agitated. That was concerning because they could influence the outcome by pulling out cash balances, unquote. That same day, Bear executives noticed a worrisome development whose potential significance they would not fully appreciate for weeks. It involved an avalanche of what are called novation requests. When a firm wants to rid itself of a contract that carries credit risk with another firm, in this case Bear Stearns, it can either sell the contract back to Bear or, in a novation request, to a third firm for a fee. By Tuesday afternoon, three big Wall Street companies, Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse, and Deutsche Bank, were experiencing a torrent of novation requests for Bear instruments. Alan Schwartz thought it strange that so many requests were being channeled to the same three firms, but did his best to assure them all that Bear remained on sound footing. Quote, Deutsche Bank we talked to, and they said, we're getting killed, unquote, says a Bear executive. We said, we'll take you out of your positions, unquote, and we did. But it was too late. By the way, Deutsche Bank is obviously a member of the Bormann Capital Network. Credit Suisse appears to be as well. Goldman Sachs, I don't know. Skipping down and continuing. Even among the circle of top executives who lived through that frantic week, no two people see the crisis at Bear the same way. Many, though, agree with some version of the scenario Alan Schwartz has come to believe. Yes, Schwartz tells friends mistakes were made. Yes, the firm was financially weakened, but the more he learned about what had happened behind the scenes that week, the more Schwartz came to believe that Bear's collapse was a premeditated attack orchestrated by market speculators who stood to profit from its demise. According to those Schwartz has briefed, these unnamed speculators, several now being investigated by the SEC, employed a complex scheme to force a handful of major Wall Street firms to hold up trades with Bear, then leaked the news to the media, creating an artificial panic. Something happened Monday that triggered this mess, says one Bear executive who has spoken to the SEC. It was as though a computer virus had been launched. Where the hell was this coming from? Who started it? We tried, believe me, but we could not track it down. We know lots of big hedge funds were spreading rumors, but how can you pursue that? Only the SEC can, and they're all over this, unquote. At the heart of this theory are the novation requests that began to pick up steam that Tuesday and Wednesday. As Bear executives later analyzed these trades, they discovered that the overwhelming majority had been made with just three firms, Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse, and Deutsche Bank. Schwartz came to believe this was no accident. In his mind, the flood of novation requests was designed to force at least one of the three firms to put a temporary halt to accepting them, which was what happened. Goldman and Credit Suisse did. News of that halt not only swept Wall Street trading floors, it appeared to gain credence the next day when David Faber asked Schwartz about it on CNBC. Quote, "I like Faber. He's a good guy, but I wonder if he ever asked himself, why is someone telling me this?" Unquote, a top Bear executive asks, again quoting, "There was a reason this was leaked, and the reason is simple. Someone wanted us to go down and go down hard," unquote. Faber says his reporting was accurate and arose from talks with a source he has known for 20 years. But who? According to one vague tale initially picked up at Lehman Brothers, a group of hedge fund managers actually celebrated Bear's collapse at a breakfast that following Sunday morning and planned a similar assault on Lehman the next week. True or not, Bear executives repeated the story to the SEC along with the names of the three firms it suspects were behind its demise. Two are hedge funds, Chicago-based Citadel, run by a trader named Ken Griffin, and SAC Capital Partners of Stamford, Connecticut, run by Stephen Cohen. A spokesman for SAC Capital said the firm vehemently denies, unquote, any suggestion that it played a role in Bear's demise. A Citadel spokeswoman said, quote, "These claims have no merit," unquote. The third suspect, at least in Bear's executives' minds, is one of its main competitors, Goldman Sachs. "Goldman Sachs was supportive of Bear Stearns," says a Goldman Sachs spokeswoman. "There is no foundation to rumors that we behaved otherwise," unquote. Several Bear executives also named an individual they believed was spreading rumors about them that week, Jeff Dorman, who briefly served as global co-head of Bear's prime mortgage brokerage business until resigning to take a similar position at Deutsche Bank last summer. Quote, "We heard Dorman was saying things last summer," says a Bear executive. At the time, we reached out to Deutsche Bank and told him he better stop it," unquote. Asked about the allegation, a Deutsche Bank spokeswoman acknowledged that Bear had sent its executives a letter last August asking Dorman not to solicit its clients as he had agreed upon leaving Bear. Deutsche Bank replied that he wasn't. The exchange didn't explicitly address what Dorman might have been saying about the firm, nor would the spokeswoman. Today, many of Bear Stearns' former employees are out of work. The firm has effectively disappeared into the maw of J.P. Morgan, along with a number of key executives, including Ace Greenberg, who became a Morgan vice chairman, and Alan Schwartz, who will probably take a position in the investment banking department. Maybe the SEC will figure out whether Bear was murdered. Maybe it won't. Even those who believe the firm was a victim of a predatory raid have their doubts it can ever be proved. Even with subpoena power, I'm not sure the SEC will get to the bottom of this because the standard of proof is just so difficult, unquote, says a vice chairman at another major investment firm. Quote, "But I hope they do, because you can look at this as just another run on a bank or as a seminal point in the financial history of this country that could bring about a change, perhaps a drastic change, in the way we govern financial markets. If there is a solution to this kind of thing, it must be found in the roots of what happened at Bear Stearns, because otherwise, I can guarantee you, it will happen again somewhere else," unquote. Even among the circle of top executives who lived through that frantic week, no two people see the crisis at Bear the same way. Many, though, agree with some version of the scenario Alan Schwartz has come to believe. Yes, Schwartz tells Friends, mistakes were made. Yes, the firm was financially weakened. But the more he learned about what had happened behind the scenes that week, the more Schwartz came to believe that Bear's collapse was a premeditated attack orchestrated by market speculators who stood to profit from its demise. According to those Schwartz has briefed, these unnamed speculators, several now being investigated by the SEC, employed a complex scheme to force a handful of major Wall Street firms to hold up trades with Bear, then leaked the news to the media, creating an artificial panic. Well, again, for a full understanding of this very frightening scenario, read the article. It will be included in its entirety in the For the Record supplemental section. Of course, it's also available in the August 2008 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. A couple of points I want to make very quickly in passing. This type of gambit, if in fact Deutsche Bank and or other underground Reich capital assets were involved, as the evidence suggests, would give that organization, again, the economic component of the underground Reich, an outgrowth of the international cartel system. It would give it economic and political control over just about any major investment entity on Earth. And in a sense, Bear Stearns could be viewed not only as a victim, but as something of an example to those who might stand up to those powerful economic entities, interests rather, who control control the economic component of the Underground Reich. Also, because of the way in which this panic was spread, the United States itself, a country which I think is not going to survive very much longer, could be easily finished off by destroying what's left of the U.S. economy. And this certainly gives us one idea of how that might be done. There are a couple of For the Record shows titled Pecunia Nervus Belli, which is a quote from Tacitus, who observed that, quote, money is the sinew of war. Well, money is pretty well bloody well than the sinew of everything. And if you destroy a country's economy, you destroy that country. And again, I want to note that there are some similarities between what apparently happened to Bear Stearns and what took place on November 22, 1963. We'll go into that inside, too. And also, I want to note that Deutsche Bank was among the companies deeply involved, apparently, in short selling in the run-up to September 11th. For the Record, 327, Were We Controlled, Part 1, goes into that in considerable detail. As always with these broadcasts, I can't stress strongly enough that listeners should not only use the other broadcasts, the other For the Record broadcasts, the archive shows, the descriptions to the programs, but use the books as well. And for an understanding of the international cartel system and how it spawned fascism, use not only the books, use the broadcasts, and use some of the descriptions to the books, paramount among them, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning. If listeners find some of the discussion here somewhat attenuated, it is, and can only be really fleshed out in its in sufficient fashion and understood in sufficient fashion by using those books. The firm, the German/Latin American firm that was pivotally involved in what will come to be known as the rumor, not the rumors that brought down Bear Stearns, apparently involving Deutsche Bank among other institutions, but the rumor, which was that the collapse of the Allied Crude Vegetable Oil Refining Corporation of Tino De Angelis was engineered, involving not only the mind control of Tino De Angelis, but also using the Bunge Corporation's tremendous assets to set up what collapsed the capital markets on the morning of November 22, 1963, a panic that was exponentially increased by President Kennedy's assassination itself. The Bunge Corporation is in the news once again. One of the stories that has been among the major stories in the last couple of years is how the use of corn to generate biofuels has jacked up the price of not only corn but other foodstuffs. And in fact, speculation is jacking up the cost of foodstuffs. The following article is from the Bloomberg News Service at www.bloomberg.com of June 23rd. It's called Bunge Agrees to Buy Corn Products for $4.2 billion. It's by Mark Herlihy and Choi Leng Yong. It reads in part, Bunge Limited, the world's largest oilseed processor, agreed to buy Corn Products International Incorporated for $4.2 billion in stock to add corn-based sweeteners as demand increases for soft drinks and processed foods in China and India. Bunge will pay the equivalent of $56 for each share of Corn Products, White Plains, New York-based Bunge said today in a statement. That's 31% more than Westchester, Illinois-based Corn Products' closing price of $42.90 on June 20th. Bunge will also assume about $414 million of Corn Products' debt. Bunge Chief Executive Officer Alberto Weiser said refining operations that sell high-fructose corn syrup and food additives to customers, including Coca-Cola and PepsiCo Incorporated. The addition gives Bunge a portfolio of projects similar to U.S. competitor ADM, that's Archer Daniels Midland, by the way, which derived 35% of its operating profit from corn processing last year. Quote, Bunge will become a more formidable competitor in global grain processing by broadening the products it sells to customers, strengthening customer relationships, driving down costs by combining logistics and risk management, and extending Bunge's reach into new markets, unquote, Credit Suisse analyst Robert Moskow said today in a note. Corn Products is the fourth largest maker of high fructose corn syrup in the U.S. and will give Bunge new customers in Pakistan, South Korea, and Thailand, Moskow said. Note again that corn is a major focal point of speculation in the commodities markets, and in general, speculation is driving up the price of food. So once again, note that Bunge Corporation, one of the pivotal elements in the rumor, as the book Were We Controlled by Lincoln Lawrence talks about, the collapse of the Allied Crude Vegetable Oil Refining firm of Tino De Angelis. Bunge once again is in the news, and Bunge is getting corny. An article from Z Magazine talks about the effect of market speculation on the price of food. Now, just suppose you are one of the commanders of the Underground Reich, or those who sympathize with them, those eugenicist thinkers around the world who want to get rid of the poor, the dirty, the unwashed, the dark-skinned, the Jews, of course, and others who are deemed to be undesirable for one reason or another. Well, using weapons is one way of doing it, and I'm of the considered opinion there will be nuclear war in the Middle East sometime in the next 10 years. That will get rid of Israel as well as a lot of other people, and people will blame the subsequent collapse of the global economy and the political order on, you got it, the Jews. But suppose you want to get rid of a whole lot of people. You can't kill everybody with a gun or a nuclear missile or anything else, but if you jack up the price of food and you jack up the cost of medical care and you jack up the cost of heating oil and other fuels and jack up the cost of housing itself, you're going to kill people by exposing them to malnutrition, to cold, to inadequate medical care. All you got to do is make the essentials of life too expensive for a lot of people to afford, and you do the same thing. You will have a new world order, and a lot of dead folks as well. In that context, consider the following: Market Madness by A.K. Gupta from Z Magazine. Unless you live in a bubble like George Bush, who expressed total surprise in February when a reporter told him gas was nearing $4 a gallon, you've been socked hard in the pocketbook by rising prices. It's most evident at the supermarket. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the cost of a gallon of milk has jumped 17%, and a dozen eggs have leaped 40% in the last year, and a loaf of bread is up nearly 30% in the last 2 years. At the gas pump, the national average for regular gasoline notched a record $3.63 a gallon in early May, double from 2005, and it looks set to break the $4 barrier this summer. As dramatic as the consumer price increases are, the frenzy on commodity exchanges, where traders negotiate future prices and related financial products known as options, is even more pronounced. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or CFTC, is an unprecedented public webcast held hearing in an unprecedented public webcast held hearings on April 22nd, examining why agricultural commodity prices are skyrocketing. It noted, quote, "In the last 3 months, the agricultural staples of wheat, corn, soybeans, rice, and oats have hit all-time highs," unquote. Over the last year, wheat prices are up 95%, soybeans are up 88%, corn is up 66%, and Thai B-grade rice, the world's trading benchmark, ended 2007 at about $360 a metric ton. It hit $760 at the end of March and continued its dizzying climb to $1,080 less than a month later. On top of that, crude oil futures have more than doubled since January of 2007, coming within a hair of $120 a barrel this April. Of course, this article is a little bit dated. It was earlier this year, and it's all gone way, way, way through that since then. One striking aspect of the rising commodity prices is that when charted, they look similar to the internet stock mania a decade ago or the charts of soaring and plunging home prices as of late. This is no mere coincidence. One of the main factors in accelerating commodity and food costs is financial speculation. The same Wall Street banks and hedge funds that gave us the stock bubble and the housing bubble are reportedly throwing billions of dollars at the commodity markets, betting they can make a fast buck. And how much of this is also being done not only to make a fast buck, but also to get rid of a lot of folks is a matter of speculation. I would note, too, in that regard, that the increase in the price of oil has also made the resuscitation of the Fischer-Tropsch process a reality. I would note that one of the things that has lent intellectual underpinning to the increase in the price of oil is the peak oil gambit, which has as its epicenter a subsidiary of Thyssen-Bornemisza Industries. Thyssen-Krupp bought out the Leuna IG Farben synthetic oil refinery in the late 1990s. And by way of sort of closing off this side, taking a look, I guess you could say that kind of like one of those 1950s B-grade horror movies, the Fischer-Tropsch process meets the biofuel situation. The following, it comes from the Yahoo News article. And this a short excerpt of this particular story. Additionally, now this talks about how various aviation interests, the Air Force and also airlines, are looking to save on gas costs by generating fuel using the Fischer-Tropsch process devised by I.G. Farben in the 1920s. By the way, the resuscitation of the Fischer-Tropsch process has been discussed in a number of broadcasts, including, for the record, I believe it's 552, and the fascist overtones to the peak oil scenario, peak oil gambit, in, for the record, 534. For the record, 544 also goes into the resuscitation of the Fischer-Tropsch process. That is the hydrogenation process from which aviation fuel and other forms of motor fuel can be derived from natural gas or coal. And in additionally, because that process produces a lot of CO2, the CO2 can be used to grow various things, including algae in nearby farms, and that could lead to the production of biofuels. So excerpting this particular Yahoo News article, additionally, because algae can be grown in tanks anywhere, biofuel-producing algae farms could be sited next to facilities producing jet fuel from coal or natural gas using the Fischer-Tropsch process, parenthetically devised by I.G. Farben. Continuing. These coal-to-liquid or gas-to-liquid processes generate large amounts of CO2 from fossil fuels, making them unsuitable as sustainable fuel sources. However, if the CO2 they generate is piped off and used to grow algae in nearby farms, the two forms of fuel production together could create an efficient, carbon-neutral symbiosis for jet fuel production. So eco-friendly Fischer-Tropsch process, and I guess you could say, again, sort of borrowing from one of those 1950s horror movies, the Fischer-Tropsch process meets the biofuels industry. It'd be interesting to see just how this one plays out. So again, as you're looking at the rising price of everything, remember who controls the money supply, and remember what the various things that enables them to do. Remember too, in this context, that among the things that are threatening the world food supply, one, the price of rice has gone up thanks to the sabotaging of American rice crops by the introduction of a genetically engineered strain of rice produced by Bayer Crop Science, a subsidiary of Bayer, one of the old member firms of IG and a key element of the Underground Reich and the Bormann Capital Network. Also, honeybees and pollinators are dying off, in part at least because of a pesticide that has been marketed by the very same Bayer Crop Science. So take a look at the starvation that is going to result from rising food prices, and keep in mind who's involved in this and some of the things that are taking place. Also bear in mind, as I've mentioned in past broadcasts, that the various German core corporations, the elements of the Bormann Capital Network, the Bormann Capital Network involves far more than just the German core corporations, but they function like the divisions of an army, whereas U.S. corporations are every entity for itself. They function in concert. It's a very effective strategy, and one that is proving not only effective, but to a lot of folks at this point, deadly. Please use the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. Use the FTR supplemental websites, the books, and the various websites, including those maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, in order to flesh out your understanding of these admittedly very complex elements of discussion. And then I think some of this will become a whole lot clearer to you than it may on the first go-round or two. This concludes Side A of For the Record program number 641, Were We Controlled? Part 2, The Collapse of Bear Stearns. This has been recorded on July 27th of the year 2008. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.